before, you know, with the last administration, you know, how's business? I 90% of the time I could tell you what they were going to say, or at least how it was going to go. And it wasn't going to be positive. You know, this past year, same question. 90% of the time they're going to be happy. And a lot of people will tell you, hey, it's not like it was. It's not like it has been in the past, 20 years ago, whatever, but we'll take it because we were on our last leg. We were about done.
The answer to last episode's trivia question is 1902.
Hey there. We'll get into the podcast in just a minute. However, I am looking for more great guests for the Blue Collar Voices show, and I've updated this older podcast with this announcement from November 2019. I am planning a road trip across America and including parts of Canada. I'll tell you more about both of these at the end of this podcast. Today on the Blue Collar Voices show, our guest is Justin Yoke. Justin works for Rouster Lifting and Rigging, a Mozilla company, and is a lifting specialist. Welcome to the show, Justin.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me, sir.
I'm delighted that you're here. So to start out, what is a lifting specialist in the context of what you do?
Well, lifting specialist, it's pretty similar to your normal outside sales rep, except it's a lot more hands-on. If you're going to do it right, it has to be hands-on. As you mentioned, I work for Rouster, a Mozilla company. And what we do, our product line ranges from lifting slings, custom lifting slings, to overhead cranes, to engineered lifters such as spreader beams, lifting tongs, coil lifters. So it's an industry in which you kind of got to get out there and see these applications firsthand. You got to talk to the people. You got to see how they're being used and what they're trying to accomplish to really get these products right, to make the application safe, which is the most important thing. So that's basically how I usually describe it. It's kind of like an outside sales rep, but a lot more hands-on. You know, I'm not going to show up in wingtip shoes and a $500 shirt. I go to work every day in my steel toes, a pair of jeans, a Rouster polo, and a Rouster ball cap, knowing that there's a good chance that I'm going to be getting dirty. So
that's awesome. So you mentioned a couple of different things, a couple like spreaders and just, I don't want you to get too much in detail, but what are those things?
Basically, we sell pretty much anything that you're going to find in an industrial heavy lifting tow line application. So basically a spreader beam lifting sling. When you see a crane, you know, when you're passing by on the highway or on TV or on the news, building a skyscraper, these are the things that are being used to actually lift the materials and everything up to where they need to be. And then we even go into fall protection and lifelines and things of that nature. So we really cover, if you see a construction site, if you see a steel mill, if you see a coal mine, if you see a drilling rig, we're going to have stuff probably on that site.
Okay. What are your requirements to get started? Obviously, at one point in time, you knew nothing about this industry, and you've reached the point now where you're helping make recommendations. How did you learn about this?
Actually, my background is in IT. I was doing IT before I did this straight out of school. And my wife's stepfather actually owned Rouster before it was sold to Mozilla. So he knew I knew a lot about computers and was pretty bright guy in general. So kept working on us to come down here and take a job with him, which I did. Started working on the website and doing data entry, that sort of thing. Then it kind of transitioned to inside sales. Spent a little time in the shop so I could actually learn about these things. I didn't know a shackle or a wire rope clip, you know, from a hole in the ground. So had to go out there a little bit and really see these things in action, see what each thing was. And then, like I said, just started getting to inside sales and then dealing with the customers directly and then getting more familiar that way. Started doing purchasing, and I've really seen it from every angle. So I kind of fell into it. Mozilla's always hiring people from all different backgrounds and sales backgrounds and everything. So it's something you can get into, but it does require a lot of training. I've taken trainings from vendors. I've taken our internal trainings, ASME, OSHA type trainings. Because if you're going to go out there making recommendations for a heavy lift, where people's lives are on the line, you better know what you're doing. So there is extensive continuing education trainings, and we're doing them every year. So
it's good training, good to have, and it's good to know that you're skilled enough to make the recommendations to these guys. You had mentioned a little bit, we had talked some leading up to this actual show, that you've been down in mines and you've been all kinds of different places. Tell me a little bit about some of the places that you have been. I mean, obviously we're talking about mines, and I know coal mines are big up there in that area. What are some places that you've been in?
A typical week can range very widely on sites that I'm going on to and applications I'm seeing. But my all-time favorite is going underground coal mines and checking that stuff out. It's just a whole different world under there. A lot of people are afraid to do it. We kind of got a little bit of advantage there because there are actually some companies that do what we do that won't go down to check out applications. But I love it. Yeah, we do a lot with oil and gas. So I've been to a lot of the drilling rigs in North Central West Virginia and up into Southern PA. And, you know, we do a lot with pipeline construction. So we get to see a lot of those rows being laid, steel mills, anything where there's a heavy lift or a big tow. We do a lot of work on the river. So I'm on the river a lot of times, looking at different winch lines and applications to where, you know, they're towing barges and the tugboat applications. And, it can take me pretty much anywhere. I cover the whole state of West Virginia pretty much, and down into Virginia and a little bit into Eastern Kentucky and Eastern Ohio. And that big span of territory, there's definitely a little bit of everything we see.
Justin, that sounds like fun.
It is fun. It is fun. It definitely is. I didn't know if I would like outside sales, when I first kind of volunteered to take that plunge. I was an operations guy, like I said. I dealt with purchasing and for kind of inside sales, and just kind of came in and did my 7 to 5 and didn't really want to have to worry about all that. But, it was the best decision I ever made. You know, after 7 years of doing that on inside and actually going out and seeing the stuff come to life and seeing the things that we've been selling be used, it's a really cool experience.
I can only imagine. I'm just thinking about if I was doing that type of thing, it'd be like visiting friends all the time.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's another thing too with this industry, and especially in West Virginia, and I might be a little partial there, but you deal with some amazing, amazing people that do become friends, and you know, that I reach out to, not looking for a PO, but looking for a good story or a good laugh or you know, an update on you know, how they're doing. So the people are definitely a huge part of what makes it such a blast.
I can only imagine. I actually have some relatives that live in West Virginia. I'm not sure exactly where. I've been there, but I couldn't tell you how to get there. Sure. I know it's in a rural area, and I lost cell service getting there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I got all sorts of, every cell booster I've tried to employ on my truck has failed me, to keep the cell service into some of the places we go. So.
Well, I was recently, let's say a year ago, I went to visit them. And I got somewhere and I was lost, and I stopped and asked somebody, and she's like, yeah, just keep driving over this, drive over the mountain. You're going to follow it on till you get to this turn and take it. And she said, you won't get cell service. And it was 20 miles before I was actually able to get cell service.
Oh yeah. I believe it. I believe it.
So yeah, but there are some very nice people there. It's very relaxed, I guess. In some ways, places that I've been, it seems like people are a little bit, I guess, laid back, not that sure. rush.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, it's definitely not uncommon for me to go to a meeting, you know, expecting it to start on time, and it starts 45 minutes later because we're, you know, eating cookies and talking about, you know, their kid's softball game or something before we actually get into business. But wouldn't have it any other way.
So you talked about going in the mines. Now I imagine like three people trying to squeeze into a little narrow space, but I've also seen pictures where they got huge equipment down. That's just vast caverns. What is the experience you've seen in the coal mines?
I've been to all sorts. I've been to, you know, surface mines where, you know, it's just all going on, you know, above surface, and they're taking off layers of the earth. That's very cool too. Usually when I go underground, most undergrounds I've been to, it's kind of low ceiling, low wall. You know, I'm about 6 foot even. And in most of these, you know, I can stand up straight with about a foot over my head. But when you get into some sections, you are completely doubled over. And you're walking doubled over for, 100 yards or more until you can get out to another high section. So, it definitely varies. There's times where you're going to get claustrophobic and you're going to get a little freaked out for sure. For the most part, it's not too bad.
Is most of the roof on this, is this just the natural earth, or do they have like poles or whatever in various places helping keep the thing supported?
It is natural earth. You will have roof plates, and they do have guys specified to that job going up there and plating the roof. Basically you're looking at a two square foot piece of 10 with a really, really, really long bolt going up through it. And that's basically, the safety guy will kind of walk around and determine where some dangerous falling rock type things may occur. And they'll get them in there and they'll just bolt it. So it's still very unsettling, but they definitely know what they're doing. I have no problems going in there. Every mine I've ever been into has been a very safety conscious mine. Some may even say overly safety conscious. So I've never been too scared. I did have one occurrence one time though. I was walking with the head safety guy in the mine. We were underground, looking at some applications with some lifting slings or toe slings, and he had a newer safety guy with him. And we were at one part, and we're sitting there talking about the slings they use in this section. And the new safety guy looks at me and he says, "Come here for a second." And I'm like, "Okay." And he kind of like pulls me towards him. Well, I look up, he takes a step forward, he takes his flashlight and just hits this piece of sheetrock that was right above where I was standing. And about a 100-pound piece of sheetrock just came crashing down right where I was standing. So, yeah, after you see that, you're a little bit ready to go. That's the only occurrence I had where there was something, really kind of, could have been damning happen in front of me.
Yeah. Right. And let's be honest, you've probably seen near misses driving down the highway above ground.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, I've never seen anything catastrophic as far as, people doing lifts, but I've been on sites 30 minutes later after people have lost arms, lost legs, lost limbs.
Wow.
It's a dangerous industry, and that's what drives us. Mozilla as a whole, it's safety number one. It's safety before profit. So, that's another reason why, you got to be so hands-on on this, because, there's just way too much on the line to be guessing at anything.
How heavy are some of these lifts, like the equipment that you, like the spreaders and the things that you're doing? What are these rated for?
We've done lifts that were 50 ton lifts. We've done lifts that, we've lifted link belt cranes with a bigger link belt crane, to get it up on a platform to be able to do some work. Our particular branch, our specialty is high performance synthetic slings, actually like wire rope replacement slings. So we pride ourselves in being able to do, big lifts and lifts that people think that these slings can't do, just because they're so light. We've done some really cool things, and I know our Cleveland branch has, made slings that have been rated for 125 ton, needed two of them because the lift was going to be 250 ton. So,
wow.
Yeah. Gigantic stuff.
How big are those cables?
That was actually a synthetic sling as well. And that's what's remarkable about the synthetics in this industry and where they're going is how light you can make a lot of this rigging. That thing, I think, was about 75 foot long. And it only weighed about 750 pounds or something like that. So they're able to get this rigging a lot lighter. But typically, if you're looking at a wire rope, when you're looking at lifts like that, you're looking at the big 4 or 5 inch diameter type stuff that's as big as our thighs.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So it can get big and heavy.
So how much reduction do you have with the synthetics?
With the ones that we sell that are actually a little bit stronger than the wire rope in the same diameter, you're looking at about, an eighth the weight. So a huge, huge weight reduction, which makes, if you're using a crane, all that rigging has to be accounted for when you're talking about the weight that the crane's picking up. So if you can replace wire rope slings that weigh 8,000 pounds with synthetic slings that weigh 1,000 pounds, you just, you know, saved yourself 7,000 pounds of pick weight. You don't need as big of a crane or what have you.
Right.
So it could be really big. And then when you're talking about underground mining, this stuff is the safety aspects are through the roof. It breaks a lot safer. It's not going to cut anyone in half like we have talked about with wire rope and chain have doing. But also guys just lugging these things around, you know, like what we like to say is instead of three guys carrying one sling with this stuff, you have one guy carrying three. So that's just some of the stuff that we're working on to help improve safety, especially in underground mining where you see so many fatalities even in 2018, you know, hundreds of people are dying in the mines a year from accidents and things of that nature that, you know, if we can help remedy that, that'd be awesome.
Well, absolutely. I agree. Safety is very, very important. What is synthetics? What is it made out of?
These synthetic slings are made out of Dyneema material or Spectra. It's a high modulus polyethylene material. I don't know the science all that great, but I do know it is the strongest man-made fiber in the world. You know, it's tougher than Kevlar and all that stuff. And they're doing some great things with it. I mean, the same materials are being used to make, you know, bulletproof vests and all sorts of really cool materials. The new netting that you see in a lot of the Major League Baseball parks, protecting people from foul balls and everything, that's made out of Dyneema rope. It's just a really cool fiber that, you know, mainly made down south in America. The European countries, the Asian countries are starting to catch on to its properties and pump it out too. Yeah, that's the fiber. A lot of people like to call this stuff nylon rope, and I have to correct them. correct them often that this is, you know, nylon rope on steroids, if you want to call it nylon rope.
Well, you say poly, it makes me think of plastics, which makes me think of oil. Or is this just a total, I don't know, is it oil derived from oils, derived petroleum?
It is a plastics material. The poly is involved, yes, sir.
Okay. So kind of getting on a personal note, just tell me a brief snapshot of, tell me how you got here from school, kind of your progression from graduating school, kind of a brief synopsis to this point.
Sure. I had I took a rocky path. You know, I was always a straight A student, and then going into high school, started playing music and started, you know, getting in the bands and everything. Got a little crazy, ended up actually dropping out of high school. And at 17, actually, it was I'd moved out, was on my own, working at gas stations, that sort of thing. I did that for a few years, realized I was wasting my potential, enrolled in college, did that, went through school, ended up with a business management degree after school, started throwing out resumes in my hometown of Morgantown, West Virginia, started throwing out resumes all over the place, just trying to get on somewhere. Actually the local hospital, Mon General Hospital, called me back, wanted to hire me in the communications department, which was a very entry level, gig, just kind of, dispatching to different departments, different doctors. After about a year of that, they realized, you know, I kind of had too much potential for that. They had an opening in their IT department, and I had taken a lot of computer classes, through school. So got an opportunity to go into there. Just worked my way up through there, was there about 5 years. And that's when, my wife's stepdad that I'd mentioned previously, started recruiting me. So, and that's when, took the job at the, at Rouster, and, it just kind of progressed from there. And about a little over 2 years ago, Mozilla bought Rouster. About 7 months after that, I got promoted, got the opportunity to go to, the lifting specialist gig, and took it. And here we are.
It's a great story and very common type story too. A lot of people, we take that little surreptitious path to get to wherever we are. So Justin, tell me about, like, if you look at your future, what it is you plan on doing in the future, what kind of things do you see? Where do you want to go?
I honestly love this company. I've never been happier in a job, doing the lifting specialist thing, with this company. So, I definitely see myself here. And I just want to, I want to grow this branch, this Rouster Lifting branch here in Beckley, West Virginia. You know, we're in the smallest market of all the branches in the company. We're in probably one of the smallest markets, of any rigging shop in the nation. And I just want to prove what we can do. I think there's a whole lot of potential in West Virginia for what we do. I think there's a whole lot of potential, in the surrounding areas, and that's growing. And it's good to see when it wasn't quite that way a couple years ago, in Appalachia. So, you know, I think things are going the right way and I want us to grow with it. And, you know, my ultimate goal is just to make this branch bigger and keep hiring people in this area that, can use some jobs and, just keep creating those jobs and, keep creating business.
So you're doing sales in this particular area. You mentioned the territory that you cover and, you know, you're expanding it. You're trying to get more business. You're trying to get more sales. What are some of the driving forces for you to increase the territory and increase sales?
You know, obviously, you know, the better I do, the better my family does. And that's always a good thing. But more than that, Rouster, these guys, we've all worked together for, you know, almost a decade. You know, Mazzella didn't cut anybody out once we got bought out. So as much as for myself, it's for these guys, it's for the guys I work with. And, you know, it's for, Mazzella as a corporation. When we got bought out, coal was on a decline. Oil and gas was on a decline. Things were pretty dire. And so when I took over sales, they were the lowest that I had ever seen them. So there were a couple, you know, rocky spots, you know, where we weren't meeting numbers that we needed to be meeting. So that's always in the back of my mind that, if you don't get out there and do this, you don't kick butt, you don't keep growing the business, that, you know, things could happen. People could lose their jobs, you know, anything could happen. So I take all that onto my plate and, you know, I want raises for these guys and, you know, I want better things for myself. And, as I mentioned earlier, I really genuinely want to create jobs in Southern West Virginia, good jobs, you know, to where there aren't many, you know, not everyone can get down in those coal mines. So outside of that kind of manufacturing, fabrication, whatever, and we can be a source for jobs for this community, that would be awesome.
Great. Do you call on new customers, cold call, reach outs, that type of thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do it all. I'll take any avenue that I can get a crease in. I'll hit that crease. So it's cold calling. It's actually picking up the phone, you know, old school style. It's emails. It's LinkedIn. It's internet prospecting. Absolutely. Any avenue I can take, especially if it's a company I really think that could benefit from our services and we can benefit from them being a customer, I'm going to try anything I can do.
So you talked about how things were rough for a while, dire straits, and sounds like things are doing better now. How much of that is based on, for instance, efforts that you have exerted versus how the economy is also just responding, and tie that in with how the economy has changed over the last couple of years till today?
Sure. I think it's about 50-50. I think it's, the economy in Southern West Virginia in particular, and, you know, Eastern Kentucky and parts of Virginia, it's undeniable that, it's in a better state than it was, you know, before this new administration. You know, it's, commonly referred to as the Trump bump down here, but, it's just true as the regulations were stripped back and things of that nature. And you just, people were kind of allowed to work in the way that they traditionally knew how down here. Things just picked up because when something like coal goes down in Southern West Virginia, you got to think about all the other businesses that are going down with it. You know, the barge companies are going to go down. They're going to slow down the supply houses, you know, all the trucking companies. It affects everyone. It's a huge trickle effect. So just with a lot of these mines opening back up and you know, just things getting better in that standpoint, I mean, there's all sorts of businesses that are going to improve with that. But, you know, and it's also just a tenacity with the whole Rouster crew. And, you know, my sales manager up in Pittsburgh, I got great leadership. And they really give us the resources we need to be able to go at this market and really attack it. And so I think us really working hard definitely plays a role, but the economy definitely plays a role as well. And as I said, it's just it's grown by leaps and bounds. You can really just literally see it and feel it over this past year. It's not such a sad sight.
Right. And I'm thinking that maybe people feel, I guess, maybe more hopeful.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Especially when you get into a lot of these businesses, and, you know, a common question I have is, you know, like most salesmen, how's business? And, you know, the people in West Virginia are going to tell you how business is. And before, you know, with the last administration, you know, how's business? I 90% of the time I could tell you what they were going to say, or at least how it was going to go. And it wasn't going to be positive. You know, this past year, same question, 90% of the time, they're going to be happy. And a lot of people will tell you, hey, it's not like it was. It's not like it has been in the past, 20 years ago, whatever, but we'll take it because we were on our last leg. We were about done.
Right. Have you seen, and I know this is kind of a little bit of a tangent, but have you seen any increase in manufacturing and I guess some of the ancillary associated in it? Like if you're going out to different places, they're not always going to be coal mining. Like you mentioned, it may be on a barge and it may be different things. So gas, but overall across the various industries, are you seeing a vitality come back in all kinds of different areas?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Absolutely. One in specific that comes to mind, you know, I was at a factory that made, truck bodies for the big rigs, heavy truck bodies. And they as of about 6 months ago, had to start going to 24-hour production, 24/7, 365, just to try to keep up with demands. I was actually in there looking at different crane opportunities and stuff, because now they need better production. They need to kick stuff out quicker because their orders have gone up through the roof. So they need faster production. They need more production. So. And that's all happened within about the last, you know, year and a half that they just, it's just opened up. And, you know, they went from, downsizing 2 years ago to, doubling what they, you know, like originally had now by opening up this third shift. So, you know, that's just one example, but, absolutely. And steel is definitely a big one that we see a lot of these steel fab places are picking up and open up their pocketbooks a lot more than they've been able to, because, you know, infrastructure is just on a rise, and then a lot of the construction and all that sort of thing. So, yes, sir, definitely feel that way. And then pipeline, as probably the whole nation knows, is just going crazy right now. And, I don't think that would have happened a couple years ago. So,
yeah. And I know that the pipeline industry is growing, but I think that what you're sharing with the metal fabrication, the truck bodies is a clear sign that either A, we need more trucks on the road, or B, people are feeling confident about replacing older trucks and upgrading. But for some reason, mm-hmm. those trucks are needed because we're shipping more items. We're doing more industry, and we aren't even getting started. Just think of how robust of economy we could have if we even had more products being manufactured here in the United States, if we were shipping more products out versus how we're buying so much and we're not manufacturing here.
Absolutely. And I think that's a trend that we're starting to see improve, obviously. Just making it easier for people to be able to do business here. I think that's huge, and that's what this administration is kind of allowing. And I think it continued to improve, but that, to your point, there's a whole lot of room for improvement for sure.
I like hearing that, because I think that this country is completely capable of manufacturing everything we need, being totally self-sufficient. And there is no reason we can't have just an incredible America.
It's very true. Yes, sir.
So out of all the time that you've been driving around, you've been seeing things, what would be one memorable experience of something that you saw? It doesn't matter. It could be something to do with the lifting equipment. It could be something in the blue collar type industry. What is something that you've seen that you're like, wow, that really stood out? Some kind of interesting story.
I guess, you know, the things that, that really stand out are a lot of the horror stories that you hear. And one of the worst ones that I had kind of been a part of, I had a company kind of call me one day out of the blue, asked me if I could come over and pick up some slings and get them recertified the same day, get them retagged and everything. They didn't have tags, OSHA regulations require tags, all that sort of stuff. So I'm like, yeah, I can probably come over, swing by. I'm in the area. So I go over there and not really know what I'm walking into. Safety guy kind of stops me and he's sitting me down. He said, all right, I'm going to let you know what's going on here. He said, you know, we had a guy, went to lift, you know, a big, huge gearbox sort of thing, you know, about an 800 pound item, grabbed an undersized chain, but not only was it undersized, it was the wrong grade. It was a chain that was graded for transporting, you know, tying down stuff as you're trucking it, not for overhead lifting. So he grabbed a small chain that was, just a carbon chain, not an alloy steel chain. Didn't think it mattered. It's, you know, just an 800 pound item. Went to hoist it up. As he got about, 10 feet up, chain gave out, came down, broke. And pretty much ripped the guy's arm off as it was coming down.
Oh.
Cause he was kind of looking the other way. So I'm there about 20 minutes later. They have me there, you know, thinking that, OSHA's going to come and all this stuff and that this chain was, you know, that he was using the wrong chain. They're going to get in trouble. So, kind of had to, you know, put that to bed cause, you know, I'm like, well, I can't, you know, we can't do all this stuff now, but the guy just, you know, being there about 20 minutes after a guy just lost his arm, you know, just the panic and the chaos that was ensuing there. And just, you know, they had just gotten rushed to the hospital about 10 minutes before I had gotten there. So, that was something that's always, stuck out in my mind and just that I even use in training, and the trainings that I do when I do trainings on safe rigging. I always bring up that story because, you know, people don't think it can happen to them. Well, you know, I was there 10 minutes after, you know, it happened to this guy and basically his arm was hanging on by a thread. So that's one that sticks in. It's a memory burner.
That's horrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And that's something we just try to beat into everyone that we talk to is just that, you know, this is your life. Cause a lot of times we'll go in and we'll go to do these trainings. And people think we're just trying to sell them stuff, scare tactics into selling them stuff, you know, whatever. You got to really, really let them know that this stuff happens. This is real life. And we're just trying to get you home.
You know, I can identify that with a little bit. A long, long time ago when I worked construction, we were doing what we did was underground tunnels and we would set these huge sections of concrete pipe in. We'd dig a little bit and we'd use a hydraulic ram and we'd push it a little further. And here's our technique as far as how, and I'm just now thinking about this, how we decided whether or not the steel cable was strong enough to pick this up. The cable slipped through the hole in top of the concrete pipe, and then you would stick a piece of pipe or whatever through the loop, and then you would pick it up. And really, we picked it up and everything looked like it was okay. Well, then we'd set it down. I can tell you right now, at no point in time did we ever know what that pipe weighed or what the limit was on that steel cable. We just picked it up. We just picked it up. Absolutely. It looks like it was good. And of course, we're moving delicately because this stuff is heavy, and we have everybody out of the way and sure, we're setting it down. But I'm just now realizing that we could have been operating way outside the tolerances and we were just fortunate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It goes on every single day. You know, that's, and it's something, yeah, that, I mean, you just don't think about it. You just, you can very easily assume that something's ready to roll. But there are ways, that people can determine the weight of that sort of thing and different measurements that you could take with different materials and everything. But, yeah, it's just a scary when in doubt, go oversized, but
indeed
it's easier said than done.
So we're going to wrap this up shortly, but I had another question, and that would be, and this is one of the questions I always ask my guests is, are you a reader?
I honestly am not a huge reader. It's shameful to admit. My dad's rolling over in his grave with me saying that. But, you know, articles, magazines, stuff like that. But as far as like actual books, it's something that I don't do as much as I need to. Definitely on stuff on, you know, leadership and sales. I've read more of those books than any other type recently.
Okay. And any kind of podcasts, anything like that?
You know, I kind of float around on Sirius XM. You know, I put in 4,000 miles a month on the truck. So I listen to a lot of stuff on there, just various stuff. But as far as actual podcasts, you know, I like a lot of the comedy stuff. You know, Joe Rogan's always always entertaining and that sort of stuff. And then I'm a big sports nut, so I'm always listening to various sports podcasts and things of that nature.
Awesome. Okay. Well, any final words that you'd like to say before we wrap this up?
Just thank you for having me on here. And, you know, if anyone, there's ever anything we could do, if anyone has a question about rigging, I don't even have to sell you anything or we don't even have to go down that road. But if you even have a question, before making a serious lift or a rigging move, you can reach out to me or anyone at Mozilla Companies. We got 14 locations, I think it is now, on the East Coast and one over in Oklahoma City. So we're kind of all over the place, but, you can find me on LinkedIn, Justin Yoke, and feel free to ask me any questions or anything. And, I'll get an answer for you. We just want people to be safe rigging out there.
Outstanding. Justin, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Today's trivia question, what is the heaviest load ever picked up by crane?
On the next episode of the Blue Collar Voices show, we have Robert Chickie. He's a wood finishing consultant and a wood finishing expert. Here's a quick little snippet.
I would look at antiques, furniture, woodwork from, you know, 100, 200, 300 years old, and you would look at it and you could see a richness and depth clarity, even though it's a color. And so I figured, how did they do that? So I read and I researched and I found a path for coloring wood without stain. And over time, I developed a way.
Hey guys, before you go, two things. The first is, I'm looking for more great guests for the Blue Collar Voices show. Basically, I'm looking for those that excel in the blue collar arena and have actually got their hands dirty, truly understanding what it is like to do the work. I realize this is an older podcast, but I'm updating this podcast in November 2019 for the announcement of an upcoming road trip. Phase one is building a list of locations to visit. Some locations will be just a meet and greet. Others will be on-site audio and or video. Please check out the website for more information. I'd love to hear from you. Email me at johnc@bluecollarvoices.com. You can also hit me up on LinkedIn. Thanks all. Looking forward to hearing from you. Blue Collar Voices is produced by John Chapman, and all audio, video, graphics are created and edited by John Chapman. Blue Collar Voices is a DR7 Media production.
I'll be back.